right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. We got a jam-packed show for you today, all right? It's a really great show. At the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with Deborah Sweet, a member of the steering committee for Rise Up October. We're going to be talking with her about the movement that is coming together to protest police terror on October 24th in New York City. Deborah's the director of The World Can't Wait, as well as the member of the steering committee for Rise Up October. Before that, we'll be talking with Gloria Pinex, mother of Darius Pinex. Darius was pulled over and shot to death in cold blood by Chicago cops in 2011. And guess what? 4 years later, all the lies they used to try and claim that what they said happened really happened were exposed. But still, no justice. So stay tuned for that one. And opening the show up, I'm very pleased to bring on someone. I've been listening to him as I saw his videos on the internet and on the Stop Mass Incarceration Network site and on the Rise Up October site. His name is Reverend Jerome McCorry. He's the faith coordinator for Rise Up October. He's going to be talking with us today on the need for Rise Up October in response to the faith community and everybody else. Pastor McCorry, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brother Michael. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, you too, man. Well, let's jump into it because I got so much to talk with you about, all right?
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so let's start off with this. Why is Rise Up October so important? You spent a lot of effort, you know, actually going out and really stomping for this and really saying, you know, that this is important. Why is it so important?
You know, it's extremely important because as we can see from what's going on around this country, and it's not a new phenomenon, it's something that's been going on for quite a while. Clearly, there are people of color who are under attack by forces that be, if you will. And in this case, we're talking about the police department, which is part of an overall justice system that has geared itself and geared its unfair, unethical efforts toward black and brown people across this nation. So it's extremely important that we stand up, that we take an extreme stand and say we're just not going to take it anymore. And I think it's important that we fight back and bring this nation together to let, again, those systems know that enough, in this case, is more than enough.
Mm-hmm. Pastor McCorry, there's something that always happens as I'm listening to you, and there's a, you know, I know that this happens, and you've run into it yourself, I'll bet, you know, is that there's a whole hell of a lot of people in this country who have no idea. They don't realize the seriousness of the situation. And that, to me, is something, you know, you get a lot of people who are like, yeah. Okay, I understand that. It's really good you're doing that, but I got to go over here and do this. Sometimes it's even, I got to get my head together, you know? And there's people who are saying that, and I can't help but think they just don't get the seriousness of the situation. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I think that's a real problem. You're absolutely right. We live in a state of denial on the one hand. On the other hand, there are people who want to believe so desperately that America is all that it's been purported over the generations to be, that we're afraid to refuse that our nation has some very real issues and some very real problems. Well, when you start thinking about 12-year-old boys, kids laying in the middle of the street, shot by police officers, when you think about an individual who's standing in a particular store holding something that is sold by the store, shot and killed by overzealous police, when you think about what happened to Sandra Bland, and the list, unfortunately, Eric Garner, goes on and on and on, it becomes more and more difficult to deny that we have a real problem. But absolutely, there are those in denial. And so, as you said, we have stomped around this country. We have been in city after city to make sure that people understand what the issues are, and we're presenting them with evidence that cannot be refuted.
You know, there's something I read that you said, you talked about that. It's not just in general that this is happening. I mean, if you look at, like, I was looking at this site the other day that they talked about people killed by cops in this year. And just with that simple Google, you get this site that keeps a list of them. And the other day, it was somewhere up around, I don't know, 891, something like that, or, you know. And you're looking at this and you're thinking, oh, this is, people don't get it, or they sort of purposely blinded themselves, you know, and because exactly because you're saying people don't want to know it. And you talk about not just that it's happening in general, which is true, and it's happening to a lot of people, but there's a very specific demographic that is being particularly targeted. And that's important for people to recognize, I think, because there are genocidal implications with this.
You know, that is so true. Michelle Alexander, author of The New Jim Crow, does a tremendous job of bringing out the fact that every couple of generations, there's a new Jim Crow system that is in place that by design goes after people of color as a means of checks and balance. When you look at what NRA and other organizations are doing to fight and to protect gun rights, for instance, we know that we target people not just to have guns, but to not have guns. For instance, mass incarceration figures into what's happening where the police are concerned. So if you take an individual and make sure that they have a record, you've now taken away what we call their right to bear arms. So we look at this massive attack in so many different levels. When you look at the fact that America is the most incarcerated country in the entire world, you see what's going on from a mass incarceration standpoint. So what happens is the ones that you don't have enough records on, the ones that haven't been targeted enough, when you begin to fight back against laws like stop and frisk, all of a sudden we got to figure out another way to deal with it. So we have seen now like a 40-year increase in this police on citizen homicide directed at people of color. By that same time period, we have seen a drop in police officers killed by civilians, black or white. And yet it's being made to look like the Black Lives Matter movement, other movements that are related to that are really the problem, when that is not the problem at all. We are watching specifically people being targeted by unfair laws, being targeted by police pistols, and we have to take this stand. And that's what Rise Up October is really all about.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very important that you're saying this about the lies that have been appearing in the press and just generally just pop up, even by just sort of like they become sort of the everybody knows, you know, the idea that the police are beleaguered and they're out there and they're really trying to protect people and they're coming under fire and this and that and that's happening. And out here in Los Angeles, just recently, I think it was a week ago, they had a demonstration in Hollywood, of all places. They had a demonstration of police talking about Blue Lives Matter. And a friend was saying, actually, what it should say is Blue Lives Matter because they're killing us. And this is the kind of situation that people, in terms of the polarization, there is this fight around the polarization in society. Which side are people going to be on? And they require some truth in order to make that decision.
You know, that is so true. And this is why we, and I'm really proud to have been asked to serve as the faith coordinator for Rise Up. I think it's an important issue. I think it's a moral imperative that faith institutions, whether it's the church, the temple, the synagogue, no matter who it is, we have a responsibility morally to stand against the kind of terrorism that we're now experiencing from police departments across this nation. So when you talk about whose lives matter, I think that you have to understand, and people have debated that back and forth, but to say Black Lives Matter only has to be said because we're the ones that are under attack. So black and brown lives have to matter. And what we're saying is that there are forces who understand and who treat white lives like they matter, who treat police lives like they matter. The problem is we haven't treated black and brown people in this nation like our lives matter.
And it is important. I would just add on the thing that you said earlier. I want people to actually understand that the truth about what's happening with the police is not that they're losing lives because they're under assault from the people, but actually the numbers of cops injured and killed have been actually going down. And the numbers of people who are being killed, I mean, we're talking about, you know, you think about this, we're talking about if this continues, well over 1,000. And there's very few cops ever prosecuted for this. There's even fewer convicted. We're talking about more than 1,000 a year. And if you go back 20 years, you know, that's more than 20,000 people. If that was 1,000 dogs that were being tortured and killed on the street, people would be in an uproar. There'd be marches and parades and all kinds of actions going on all the time. But that's what we're fighting over, is this has to change. The general sort of, oh, well, what can you do about it, has to change. There's been some incidents, and you've been involved in some of it, where people have stood up, but there's actually nationwide, there has to be much more of a sort of a tsunami of people stand up. We will not tolerate this anymore.
You know, that's exactly what has to happen. And for me, I think one of the significant things about going to New York on October the 22nd through the 24th is that it just happens to be that's where the United Nations is located. And not only that, but the United Nations anniversary happens to be on October the 24th. And that wasn't planned out that way. It just happened that way. This country has been great at indicting other nations and other leaders of other nations for what we term as crimes against humanity. We think that this is now an international problem, and the international community has this opportunity to turn and look back at this country and say, maybe it's time we indict you for crimes against humanity in America. So we have a tremendous amount of work to do, and we must take this message and get this message out across the country. And I think if I can say so, we have to stop looking at things that separate us. It is not about, when it comes to the fight, black, white, brown, yellow, red, it's not about Muslim versus Christian. It's not about Baptist versus Methodist. Those are nothing more than numerators. The common denominator is the police are not asking us what our religious background is. They're not doing any of that or what fraternities or sororities we belong to before they pull the trigger. And we've got to stand up in this nation and come together.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Reverend Jerome McCorry, Faith Coordinator for Rise Up October. And we're talking about the need for Rise Up October in general and the response of the faith community to it. Now, Pastor McCorry, one of the things that you've talked about, which I thought was really important, when you, and you started to get into this a little bit earlier, you talked about the role of the churches, the faith institutions. You talked about the historic role, but also what's happening today. And I want to sort of get a sense from you about what's happening, because I've read some things that you've talked about where you said sometimes you run into preachers who are like, well, I want to talk about this, but you say they don't know how to preach about it. And you talked about the real need today for a real theology of liberation.
You know, that is so true. We have that need for that theology of liberation. We must, those of us who know, must be willing to share with others. But I think that it begins when the preacher and when the imam and when the rabbi become transparent enough to make those kinds of admissions, then we need to be ready to fill that void. Just as it was in the late 50s, throughout the 60s and early 70s, when the what we call America's modern civil rights movement was really being played out in this country, it was the faith community that took the lead. But we have young folks now who are saying, we no longer have confidence in you guys. We don't believe in the work of the church or the mosque anymore because we don't see you out here. My message to faith leaders is we have an opportunity to regain our role. We don't have to be the leaders of the movement, but we certainly have to be the supporters, and we have to be the advisors, and we have to play a very key role in what's going on in response to this situation. So we have an obvious role to play.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the same time, and I think that's really important, at the same time, I keep thinking back to your point about a moral imperative as well, because there is this point of, and I found it very interesting, on the August 27th event in New York City, you were talking about being down in Ferguson, and you posed this whole challenge to people, which does have to do with a moral imperative, of which side are you on? You know, and you talked about how that played out for you in relation to the police chief coming up to you and saying, you know, really, I kind of agree with you guys. And you did a whole riff on that. I wanted you to tell people about that. Right? I thought it was very good.
You know, absolutely. In fact, we had just done a press conference right across the street from the police department. And we talked about Rise Up, and we talked about the need to fight back. And there's a at that time, is an interim police chief happens to be a African-American individual who was sitting in his car, who walked over to me after I spoke at the press conference, and he whispered in my ear and pulled me aside, and he said, I know who you are, and you may not believe this, but I'm actually on you guys' side. And I had to say to him, you know what, you're absolutely right. And as he looked at me sort of in unbelief, I said to him, I would have a hard time believing that you're actually on our side. It's difficult for me to accept or to believe that you can be on our side and not be working for change.
Well, you said also this thing of, because it really does, you know, people are always looking, you know, this is one of the things that happens. And I think it impacts, you know, people's sort of hesitancy to really get out in the streets when it needs to be, need to be out there in their tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. The idea that, you know, you can somehow fix it, you know, and you made a statement that you said, and you were referring to him in particular, but I thought there was a general point to it too, where you said, look here, you cannot fix the police by trying to become the police. Let's talk about that.
You know, that's absolutely true. One of the, there are a number of solutions people are looking at, and we have to remind people that a camera, for instance, is not exactly a panacea. We have really captured a lot of things on film, and it has not improved the situation. Well, it's the same thing when people are now saying, well, another good step might be to have more black police officers. Well, we've got plenty of black police officers, but they turn blue the minute they put the uniform on. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we must understand that it's a state of mind. Policing grew out of the old slave catchers, if you will. Policing in the United States grew out of the state militias. Policing grew out of all of these little backwoods folks who took on the role of constables, and the discipline never changed. It was always to keep those people in their place, which is why in one community, you protect the man. In another community, you protect the land, because the man in the first community usually owns the land in the second community. So having more police, more black police officers, more police officers of color, is not the solution to the problem. You cannot build something new on an old foundation. Therefore, it's the foundation that it is established upon that must be destroyed. And I think that's where the word, and people are afraid of words, but that's where the word revolution comes into play. You must destroy the old foundation and build a new foundation. The system of justice in America is totally broken. And if you continue to build on the old foundation, it's going to always be a little raggedy, and it's going to fall to the ground.
Mm-hmm. And now, following up off of that, there's something that's very, very important about this whole Rise Up October push and the event itself, the 3 days in New York, all that's happening there. And that is that speaking truth to power and doing this kind of really coming up in the face of all those people who are looking for some way short, some way to finesse things and to build on that old foundation that you're talking about. And just, you know, we'll just tighten a few screws here, loosen some up over here. There's a real emphasis in this effort to really bring the families of the people who have been killed by the police to the forefront. Let's talk about the importance to do that and what you're aiming to do in terms of bring the numbers of people you're trying to bring, the families you're trying to bring, and how you're trying to do that.
You know, literally, we're looking at bringing family members that represent 100 people who have lost their lives to this kind of police terror together. We want to bring them together to New York. First of all, we want to say to them that you're not in this alone. And we want a powerful demonstration of literally hundreds of thousands of people to be gathered in New York so that we can say to them that the truth is America is with you. I think the second part of that in bringing them there is to show the kinship and solidarity. These people belong to a club they never filled an application out for. They never volunteered. They never signed up. It was something that happened to them. And we want to bring these people together to send this very serious and this very real message. The faith community is essential to us getting these people there because they can help us to raise the necessary funds to do that. They can help to supply buses and vans and plane tickets to ensure that we're getting people where they need to be in New York City. It is perhaps the most important part of this work, making sure that families are represented in New York City.
I have one more question for you, Pastor McCory. You've talked a lot about this can't be the end of something, what happens on October 24th and October 22nd and 23rd as well. It can't be the end of something. It's got to be the start of something altogether new and different in a certain sense in terms of what's characterizing this situation inside this country. You talk about that in relation to Rise Up October changing things. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. I've always said, and I've said from the very beginning, Rise Up October should not be an end, but it should be the beginning of something monumental that takes place in this nation. Reaching out to the faith community, working with those clergy that don't understand. You know, I have this dual responsibility where I serve as faith coordinator for the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And I intend to continue to travel around the country to visit churches, to spend time with folk that are in clergy, but also where I spend most of my time on the streets in volatile situations to ensure that the voices of people who are hurting are heard around this nation. And we are committed to continuously doing that and to building coalitions of people who are going to continue this fight until, as Dr. King would say, and as the Bible teaches us, until justice roll down like water and righteousness a mighty stream. We got work to do.
I'm raring to go here, okay? And I hope all my listeners are as well. And for you, what would you say, as we're closing out, what will you say to the faith community, to the people that are involved in the churches? What would you say to them right now?
I would say now is the time to stand up and be strong. If you are a member of someone's church, temple, or synagogue, it may take you to go to your leader and shake and wake that leader and say, get involved with Rise Up. Get involved with these issues that are taking place in the community. It is why we have commissioned you. It is why you are here. The time is now to make a decision about which side we're going to be on. And I think that would make a tremendous difference.
All right. I agree with you 100%, Reverend McCory. Great talking with you. I look forward to meeting you during those days in New York.
We're looking forward to it. And thank you for all that you do, my brother.
Sure, man. Take care now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Reverend Jerome McCory, who's the faith coordinator for Rise Up October. And we've been talking about the need for Rise Up October and the response of the faith community and the situation in this country. All right. And we're going to take a quick musical break and be right back. So stay tuned.
Come on. Seen it too much, too much, too much to know. personal villa gun blast. Born in a BX when earth and was burning. Every block had a liquor spot in a church sermon. Faded through the haze when pops was living real high. Seen her best die, wonder why she's still alive. Graduated on the road, 2 months seated. Didn't listen when the fam said it's all she ever needed. Not defeated when the host goes transfer to her. Try to give a baby all her mama never coulda. Raise a little man strong, proud and intelligent. Single mother best story in a tenement. Doing all she can to change her family position. Unaware of the next chapter had another mission. Now we...
Welcome back. That's A Bronx Tale by the Aesthetics Crew. Really powerful, really very, very important piece. And I'm glad we played that today because my next guest is Gloria Pinex. Gloria is the mother of Darius Pinex, and Darius was pulled over and shot to death in cold blood by Chicago cops in 2011. The police were never charged for this murder. And in fact, recently, what happened was an entire conspiracy by the police that actually lays bare both what happened to Darius, but also indicates the kind of stuff that's going on all over this country. Gloria, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Sure. Why don't you tell people to start what happened to Darius in 2011?
2011, Darius, my son, and one of his friends, Matthew Collier, were going to, my son was driving his friend to the train stop. And they was on 67th and Racine at a stoplight. A police Tahoe pulled up on the side of them as though he was making a turn at the stoplight. When my son pulled off in his car, the police officers proceeded to follow behind him. And instantly, they put their spotlight on his driver's license plate. So my son pulled over, and in the attempt of him pulling over, the Tahoe boxed him in. Meaning it pulled in front of his car. The police officers then proceeded to jump out the car with their weapons out and masks on their face, ordering my son and the passenger to get out of the car. My son rolled down his window a little bit and gave them his driver's license and insurance, and they still was fought trying to order him out the car. Then I'm assuming Matthew Collier went to go and release his seatbelt or whatever, and the police officer on my son's side started shooting. My son put his car in reverse. He hit a tree. Then Sierra was steady firing at him, and he proceeded to go back forward more, and he ended up hitting a pole. By this time, Mosqueda, the other police officer, is opening up fire on him. Unloaded his weapon on my son's car. He even stated that he reloaded. And that night, I stood out in the cold. You know, it was freezing cold out there. Someone came and knocked on my door and told me immediately that my son had been murdered by the police. We were on the scene less than 10 minutes. We was there. They had it taped off. So it was taped off from May to Aberdeen. That's like almost two blocks. My son's car is sitting in the middle. I approached the officer and I asked him, you know, what's going on? I believe that that's my son in the car. They told me that that's not my son. My son is gone. If I want to see my son, he's at the morgue. It was actually way worse than that, but I'm on the radio, so I'm kind of clearing it up. So we asked where the morgue was at. He told us 2020 West Madison or whatever, but I knew he wasn't gone because it just happened, you know. So I stood out there, and I was trying to get answers on what happened. No one wanted to tell me. No one talked to me. They stood there with their arms folded like I was no one, you know. And like I said, I stood out there for hours. Judy Wang, the lady from the news of Channel 9, well, she ended up pulling up and getting a story right away. even though I was standing out there waiting on an answer. And Judy Wang is the one that ended up telling me what the police said happened. And what they said happened was that he just reversed his car and drug an officer and attempted to run over the other one.
Before we pursue this any further, I want you to tell people a little bit about Darius, because, you know, one of the things that they do, that the system always does, is they demonize the people that are brutalized and killed by the police. Tell us a little bit about Darius, who he was, what kind of person he was.
Well, Darius was a very dedicated father of three daughters. Darius was like almost the man of the house. I had my son when I was very young, and we basically grew up together. He started having his children young. Darius was very outstanding, very outspoken, very sincere. He very respectful to the ladies. He had all the ladies, put it that way. But he helped his granny. He was just so humorous and so funny. You know, he was something else, just put it that way. He was a blessing to have. And they don't know what they took from me when they took him from me, you know. And every day I think about my child, you know, and try to put myself in his shoes and what was on his mind, what was he going through, you know what I'm saying, at that time that the police were standing there with their guns out and masks on their face, you know what I'm saying. I can only think that he knew that he probably was going to lose his life that night, you know. To hear an officer say that while he was handing over his driver's license and insurance, his hand was shaking, you know. Oh, and that raised my alarm on my police alarm. It raised my police alarm, you know. It couldn't have been the fact that you got a gun in his face and your finger on the trigger, and he knowing that y'all on BS, he know that don't no traffic stop go this way, you know what I'm saying? And he was not getting out of his car, and I don't blame him for not getting out of his car, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, and I just sit here and I just keep thinking, what they do to people is just absolutely outrageous. And I kept thinking, in your case, you went 4 years and you lived with the lies that they were telling you and no way to disprove the lies, but you ended up going to court. You went into court to fight around this and you sued the cops in federal court. Now, during the trial, something very rare happened. Something extremely rare happened. Tell people what happened during the trial.
Well, what happened in the trial was I'm looking at police officers steady perjuring themselves on the witness stand about the encounter that night, and then mysteriously this Zone 6 call appeared.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
A Zone 6 call is a call that they hear over their radios. 7th District and 8th District can pick this zone up, this call up. They was trying to deceive me, deceive the courts with a 4th District call. The 4th District call was a call that they could never have heard, okay? This call is way, way over, miles and miles and miles away from the 7th District. The 4th District call came from 93rd and East End.
Now, that call was doing what? Was saying what to the cops?
That call was saying, the 4th District call was saying that it was a black Aurora that was in a chase. It had a temporary license plate, which they had read the temporary license plate off. And they said that they believed that it might be a gun in the car because of the way the driver was driving. Now, on the 6th zone call, which they actually heard, the 6th zone call stated 1998 Aurora. It never said any color, never said anything about rims, and it also stated the license plate of the car. And that call was only 20 seconds long for them to come right back behind that and say terminate because they had the car. And that was 3.5 hours before they even encountered my son.
So in other words, they made everything up that they said when they killed Darius. They made everything up. And what was shown in court is that they did make everything up.
Yes, exactly.
And the prosecutor was actually involved in helping cover it all up as well, right?
Exactly. Mr. Jordan Marr states that he was familiar about the Zone 6 call a week before trial. But I believe that he knew about the call way before a week because he argued so hard. He argued so hard for that 4th District call to be played in, you know, and by the police officers not being able to hear that 4th District call, we're still trying to figure out who fed them the information of that 4th District call.
Now, even knowing all that, the courts knowing all of that that you just laid out to people, which is really should be making people's stomach turn, what happened? What happened in the court case? What happened? Did they find the cops guilty?
No. Actually, the jurors sided with the police. My heart fell to the floor. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, they're hearing the same thing I'm hearing in this courtroom. And for them to side with them police officers, it was just devastating to me. I just could not believe it. Mm-hmm. But I walked out of there with my head up high, and I had faith that something was going to prevail. The case from the beginning was almost impossible. You know, I had no footage, no audio, no anything. All I had was my witness, you know, my star witness. And they really, really tried to tear him down on his statement on what really actually happened. But by them doing that, and everything just came to the light. And I just thank the good Lord for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Now, let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Gloria Pinex. And Gloria is the mother of Darius Pinex, a young man who was pulled over and shot to death in cold blood by Chicago cops in 2011. And later it was shown that the cops had lied about everything they said necessitated them to murder Darius. Now, Gloria, tell me this. You walked out of that courtroom and you saw what the justice system is doing and the way that they keep constantly, they actually justice their, they, it seems like even more, it's more apparent to people that the justice is justifying police murder and pillaging and torturing of people and in the mass arrests and all this. But you also, you got out there and you got active and you started demanding justice for Darius. And then you found out you met up with Rise Up October. Let's talk about that. Why is that important?
It's important because every day you turn on your TV, you hear about somebody black losing their lives by the hands of the Chicago police. And knowing that there'll never be any justice brought to that family. And it's time to start fighting back. That's all I know. For all the mothers that's out there that's getting ready to go through what I'm going through or already going through what I'm going through, I just tell them the fight is real and don't give up. Don't let them tell you no any old thing about your child, you know, because you know your child. You know, you sleep with your child. Mm-hmm. I just know I had to stand up and fight for mass. I knew what they was telling me was not right. That's not my child. It's not his character. And I was seeking answers, and I did not give up. I found people that they said was out there that synced it. I went and found some people. I became my own detective. You know, I was so obsessed with it and so angry with it that I kept reading that police report, and I kept reading that police report to make sure that that's what I was reading. And I'm like, okay, I'm not no lawyer, and I'm not no police officer. But the stuff that I'm reading right here lets me know that these people are lying. You know, to see that cover up, it hurts so bad. It's a real hard pill to swallow, knowing that you got to fight for justice. That it's just crazy. These people should be treated the same way any other ordinary person would be treated. You know, go to jail, get indicted, go to jail, do your time, and move on with your life. But they want us to deal with the burden of them just taking our loved ones like that, and we just have to keep striving and moving on with our life. No, mm-hmm. It's not that easy.
Now, you've become part of this Rise Up October, which is actually calling on people from all over the country, not just from New York City, but people all over the country, from Chicago, from L.A., people to get to New York, and take a stand. Why do you think that it's important for people to take a stand?
It's important so we can end it. It must end. This should be the start right here. When we show those hundreds of people, family members who have lost their, you know, families by the police officers, and show how serious and real this is, we got to stand up and end it. I think the mass numbers of people that come and stand up with me and the other mothers, I think that should be a strong statement that we're serious about ending this, and it must end. And anybody that's against it, you got to go to.
All right, Gloria, thank you very much for joining us today. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, just justice for Darius Pinex and all the other mothers who's going through what I'm going through.
All right, Gloria, take care. It was great talking with you, and really take care.
And Rise Up in October. Stand with me and Rise Up October in New York.
All right, you got it, sister. I'll meet you in New York, all right?
All right.
Take care now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Gloria Pinex, mother of Darius Pinex, who was pulled over and shot to death in cold blood by Chicago cops in 2011. And then 4 years later, it was proven that the cops actually created, they just had a whole cloth, they just created this whole imaginary scenario. And the court said, well, we like the cops. They're all right. They're cool. And actually, before we go, because I want to, just off of what Gloria was just saying, I want to give a couple of things that people can go to check more out. You can go to revcom.us. That's a site that you'll get lots of information from the big picture about how this whole society is responsible for this and we got to get rid of this society. You can also go to stopmassincarceration.net and you can go to riseupoctober.org and you can call Rise Up October by calling 646-709-1961. Once again, that's 646-709-1961. All right? We're going to take a quick break and be right back, so stay tuned.
You are looking good. You brought me home again. I want to start out with a chant. I'm going to do it once, then I want you to do it with me twice. Indict, convict, send those killer cops to jail. The whole damn system is
continental poverty.
They black and white calling me a nigga. Wish you ran, boy, so we could pull the trigger. You better learn fast in this game of hate. In the game of thrones, you know what's on. In the danger zone, black lives are the prize as they shoot us in the back. It's a straight up fact. You better rap or play ball. It's all that they told us. On the second strike, I got you coming from the shoulders. On the city streets with these racist ass rollers. Parole to controllers, or it's probation. Mass incarceration across the nation. With no time wasted, man, they got me blazing. Lace up the youth with the truth, how we come and demonstrate at the rally with my sisters and brothers. Hey, got a scene as a threat. Stop mass incarceration.net. Just one of the voices that's seen as a threat. Stop mass incarceration.
All right, welcome back. Great song. It's by Jay Deuce. I think I'm saying his name correctly. And it's SMI Volume 2. Okay? Check that out. It's really a very heavy song. Great song. And we've had two songs that are killer songs today. They will be up on my website when the show is posted up on my website. We'll put the whole songs up there, right? So people can listen to them. They can go to, you know, fall asleep with them. But you won't be able to go to sleep because you'll be getting really hot and angry as you're listening to it and inspired as well. Joining us now is Deborah Sweet, director of World Can't Wait, and a member of the steering committee for Rise Up October. Deborah, welcome back to the show after such a long absence.
Oh, well, I'm glad you called. Here I am. I'm always glad to be on your show, Michael.
There you go. That's what I was fishing for. Listen, we got about 18 minutes or so, and I said I don't want to waste a second. We're about 3 weeks out from the big events in New York City, from Rise Up October. We're 3 weeks out. How are things shaping up? You're in the national office. You have a sense of what's going on across the country. How are things shaping up?
We're starting to really see very important shoots of the basis for this protest. It is a one-day protest on Saturday, October 24th, and 3 days of actions total here in New York, two important days leading up to it. And it's more than that. It is opening salvos of a very national approach to taking on this problem of the epidemic of police murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not possible now to say for sure that we're going to have the many tens of thousands of people in the street that is needed. It's possible to say that there are buses coming from the South, the Midwest. People are calling constantly, and we're hearing from more college campuses. We're hearing from many more families who we are working with to get their transportation in place so that we will be having at least members of 100 families who have lost loved ones to the police present starting October 22nd, Thursday, October 22nd at Times Square. We're going to have Stolen Lives say their name. And that's inspired directly from the song from Wonderland and Janelle Monáe, the title of How You Talk About, where the refrain is, say their names publicly. And we're going to be attempting to read through some of the many thousands of names that have been accumulated by the murderous actions of U.S. law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is beginning to shape up, where thousands of people are getting daily emails about this. More than, I think about 600 people have signed the call, including some very well-known people, and we have a major crowdfunded campaign going on right now on the platform Indiegogo that we are, it's one of the ways that we're getting some of the major money needed for this. $100,000 is the goal, and 1,000 donors bringing in that $100,000 mm-hmm. is what we're going for by spreading this campaign all over.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. You know, as I was going through the site and checking some different things out, there's a couple of things that I noticed. One is that there seems to be a flurry of new signatures coming on. Can we talk about that a little? Is that, and at the same time, there's this flurry of some new signatures, but at the same time, I was reading a letter recently that was written to people with a voice that actually carries some weight in society in terms of creating public opinion and the need for even more people from those ranks to step up and get behind us. Let's talk about those two things.
Well, the part of the flurry is coming from the family themselves. Word of Rise Up October is penetrating beyond people that have known about it for months and getting out to including families who have had loved ones killed only in 2015. I think people have been on your show, Alice Howell from Waukegan, Illinois, who lost her grandson on the 6-month anniversary of that, 6 months since her grandson, Justice Howell, was shot down and shot in the back by police in Zion, Illinois. All of this is spreading around, and we're hearing from more families. And then, of course, with that comes more stories like Gloria's, more stories like Alice's. And this is a very much of a centerpiece of what's going to be happening with Rise Up October, that the undeniable reality behind unarmed people, mostly black and brown, being shot down, being tasered to death, like LaRico Williams, whose whole family just signed the call within the last 2 days, tasered to death, where the coroner said he had never seen a heart torn up like LaRico Williams' heart was, torn up by officers in Charlotte, North Carolina, who tasered him. So this is part of what's coming together. And mm-hmm. the importance of all putting these stories before people, which, you know, it makes you choke up even thinking and talking about it, is that the reality of this is something the system cannot cover up. They can try to justify it, and they do. But the reality of what happened, put before millions of people, is the goal of Rise Up October, so that everybody feels compelled to answer that question. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of the enforcers carrying out this with impunity, with increasing regularity, on track to be more than 1,000 people killed by the police in the U.S. this year? Or are you on the side of stopping it? The very simple, compelling demand of this march is stop police terror. Stop killing people. Mm-hmm. Nothing complicated about that, and very important that people get out on the streets and say it.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Deborah Sweet, Director of World Can't Wait, and a member of the steering committee for Rise Up October. Now, Deborah, one of the things I did want to revisit, though, too, because as you're saying this, you know, you present this, everything that you're presenting presents a very compelling picture, and it also presents a sort of a moral challenge to people. There's a certain morality that is really staring. People are looking at it like making a decision, which side are they on? There's a lot of morality tied up in making that decision. And I wanted to ask you, like, if you could say something to the people we've been doing. I've done a lot on the show of trying to talk to people in Hollywood who listen to the show, who I know have told me that they listen to the show. And there's people who also, you know, people who, writers and, you know, whatever, who actually have some sort of a voice in society that reverberates bigger than other people's voices. What would you say to those people in terms of this? You know, you have to actually step up and really decide which side are you on?
This is one of those moments in history that we're going to look back on and say, as we did in the 50s, when a few prominent people, and then in the 60s it happened more, opened their mouths in support of a movement for civil rights. And in the 60s opened their mouths in support of the struggle for black liberation and for the ending of the Vietnam War. This is a moment when something so acute in this society, so raw and open, so completely illegitimate, has been exposed, because last year in 2014, people came into the streets against the killing of Eric Garner and Michael Brown and this whole epidemic. This opened things up, but there's been a whole counteroffensive. I think it's really, for people who mainly listen to Pacifica Radio or read the New York Times, and that may be some of your audience, you may not be aware that on Fox News over the last several weeks, they've been hitting very hard at their contention that the Black Lives Matter movement is a terrorist movement.
Mm.
And on CNN, you know, it's a little different. They say, well, is the Black Lives Matter movement a terrorist movement? The message isn't any better, and the implication is that somehow the people protesting for justice are creating a problem, and not a system of systematic killing, stop and frisk, laws where black and brown people in particular are vulnerable to their very bodies being destroyed by the authorities. It's that stark. As Carl Dix, you know, I know Carl has been on your show a lot, and he says, look, this is an aspect of genocide to this. You look at the statistics, the great majority of people killed by police are black and brown. Yes, white people are killed. It's not legitimate to me for any government to shoot down somebody, especially when they're unarmed, and to shoot down people and execute them without all the proper procedures being in place to even determine whether they're guilty. But this is not that. This is not random. This is systematic. And for people to know this, our job, and we're taking it seriously, is to put these stories out there so people know, so that you can't say you don't know and you can't turn away. But then to be silent and not use your platform in speaking up about this is really unconscionable. We have a chance here now to put this movement once again, to keep it in the forefront and to really advance off of October 24th on a national basis, not just fighting one killing by police locally, one at a time. They're coming three and four a day, not just one at a time, but to say, no, nationally, we are coming together to stand together across really all barriers. We're calling on everybody to come out to this. Again, the very simple demand, stop police terror.
And you know,
the vast majority of this country ought to unite on that.
Yeah, and actually it's really important, because the thing you were talking about the people that stepped up around civil rights and in the 60s and whatnot. And then there's also, I have a friend who told me that the thing that actually shaped most of his adult life was he was an actor who was beginning his career when the McCarthy attacks came out. And he saw a lot of friends, a lot of people that he knew were being targeted and driven out of work and having forced to leave the country and whatnot. And he said he didn't speak up. And he realized much later, he said he didn't speak up because he was just starting. And it was something that he carried as a shame, a mark of shame for a long time, which is not something, you don't have to do that. You know, you can actually repudiate it, but which is what he ended up doing. But he said that actually, because he recognized what he did, that being silent in the face of these horrendous assaults, and especially when you're talking about the stuff that's going on now, is actually to be giving your consent to this happening. And I think that's extremely important for people to think about as they're considering, are they going to be in New York City? Are they going to be getting other people? Are they going to take responsibility for actually building this?
Yeah, I mean, we're providing all sorts of openings for people to step up here. I'm very glad to say that the actor Mark Ruffalo made a very generous donation publicly on the Indiegogo campaign, and then he tweeted about it to his 1.9 million followers. I think that's an example of someone using a platform available to them, literally, to stand with the people. And I know from corresponding with them that some of the family members were just incredibly moved by this. This really, to have been villainized by the local authorities in your town, and to be told that you're an angry, bitter person, and to basically to stay out of her face and accept what happened to your son or daughter, and then to hear a very respected actor say, you know, I'm giving $2,500 so that a half a busload of people can come to this event is very, very encouraging. This gives them some backing and some backup and makes people stand just a little bit taller. We know we have right on our side when we're going into this battle together. But it is very important that actors, performers, script writers, visual artists, and not to mention all sorts of other professionals and even politicians come out with us at Times Square, 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, October 22nd, when we say the names. Many families from around the country are going to be there with photos of their loved ones. We will have lists of, as I said, some of the thousands of people who have been killed. And we're going to have shifts so that people can come and take a 5 or 10 minute shift of reading these names, be part of the scene in front of the international media. It turns out that October 24th is the anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights when the UN was founded. And people are saying to us, oh, that's why you're marching on October 24th. That's not actually, I don't think, why the date was picked.
But it's a nice coincidence.
Thing to talk about right. Because you want to talk about human rights. Here's an example. We are going to be within a mile of the UN on the morning of October 22nd, showing how people here don't have human rights not to be killed by the power of blue.
Deborah, on that people note, we're going to have to wrap it up because we're running real close on time, and I want to read something very quickly. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Sure.
Okay, take care. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Deborah Sweet, who's the director of World Can't Wait and on the steering committee of Rise Up October. All right, now there's something I wanted to read to you today because I think it's so powerful and so beautiful and so full of the spirit that we all need to be imbued with today. And this is from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA. There is the potential for something of unprecedented beauty to arise out of unspeakable ugliness. Black people playing a crucial role in putting an end, at long last, to this system which has, for so long, not just exploited, but dehumanized, terrorized, and tormented them in a thousand ways. Putting an end to this in the only way it can be done, by fighting to emancipate humanity, to put an end to the long night in which human society has been divided into masters and slaves, and the masses of humanity have been lashed, beaten, raped, slaughtered, shackled, and shrouded in ignorance and misery. Once again, that's from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA. And I'd encourage each and every one of you to go to revcom.us. You can find a copy of that up there and all kinds of other things, including a lot of Avakian's other works. Once again, you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate. And we had a packed show for you today, and I think actually, hopefully you all got a lot out of it, because I certainly did. I want to thank all of my guests today. Reverend Jerome McCory, the faith coordinator for Rise Up October, who spoke to us on the need for Rise Up October and the response of the faith community. We also spoke with Gloria Pinex, mother of Darius Pinex. Darius was pulled over and shot to death in cold blood by Chicago cops in 2011. The police were never charged for this murder, and recently, a whole conspiracy by the police and prosecutors to cover up this crime has come to light. And I also want to thank Deborah Sweet, a member of the steering committee for Rise Up October. She spoke with us about the movement that's coming together to protest police terror and murder, and especially those 3 days, October 22nd, 23rd, and 24th in New York City, Rise Up October. And I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my board op for today, Teddy Robinson. I also want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate at themichaelslateshow.com. All right? So write to me and tell me what you're thinking, and I'll get right back to you. And one more thing. I'm going to be doing my show live from New York City in the last 2 weeks of October. And if there's anybody out there that wants to volunteer to come and help produce the show and do some work on it, get it up there and going so we can have the biggest impact as possible across the country, join us. We're going to be doing the show centered around Rise Up October. So if you're interested, don't hesitate to write me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with a song that actually is very much what its title is. It's by Outer National, and it's called Fighting Song. Check this out.
Something more.